Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
You're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, the newly minted Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob is being asked to consider new approaches to managing Malaysia's triple crisis. Now, in a joint statement yesterday, the two trade groups have called for a bipartisan pact of about 12 to 18 months, which they claim will allow for stability within the government and improve policymaking and implementation. One of those trade groups joins us tonight. Datuk Tan Yew Singh is the president of the Malaysia-China Chamber of Commerce. Datuk Tan, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us tonight. Now, if investor confidence has in fact been eroded, as many have claimed, I'm wondering what you would like to see to restore that investor confidence.
Hello. It is clear that the investor losing their confidence mainly because of the unsettled political situation, but also the COVID, the way that we handle COVID looks like becoming even more serious, and also the lockdown and the various policy MCO that have been implemented. And I think generally the confidence, not just the FDI, the foreign investor, but even local businesses, investment, are all losing confidence. And that is why there's such the perception. And I think when MCCC, as you read the announcement by our new Prime Minister, especially his concept of Keluarga Malaysia, which is talking about inclusivity, talking about governance, talking about one big family and how to tackle the national crisis together, we are encouraged by what he said. Because especially the inclusivity, talking about inviting political divides on both sides to come together and to actually look at our problem of COVID, vaccination, economic recovery. And I think all this will give people a very positive sign that the stalemate, the political stalemate, hopefully there is a temporary solution at least, and then the country can pull together to face all the problems we are facing now.
You see, I understand that the Prime Minister has already said that he's ruling out a unity government. So the option of having members from both sides of the aisle join his cabinet now seems to be off the table, but he's still interested in finding what he calls an appropriate place for the opposition. How do we distinguish between a genuine inclusion and a cosmetic inclusion, not just of the political players, but in your case, you know, the business sector? How can the genuine inclusion of business interests and concerns versus cosmetic approach?
Yeah, I think we are not talking about unity government here, knowing that the politicians, they are very sensitive about the sharing of power. So the unity government, to me, it will give rise to more internal politicking, discussion, and things like that, which our country cannot afford it. So I'm slightly more pragmatic. I look at what is being proposed is the National Recovery Council to bring in the philosophy of inclusivity. I think that is good enough. Good enough for this critical period. I actually say that this is almost like a wartime crisis that we are facing. We need to pull together all sorts of energy and forces and focus together to solve this problem. So if we talk about the National Recovery Council, I would even go to say that if according to our Prime Minister's principle of inclusivity, then that should also involve the state government. And maybe we should even call it enlarge the National Recovery Council into a federal state council and also to involve Chamber of Commerce, all those established national Chamber of Commerce or some of the CSO, of course, it cannot be too big a group, but a representative from all different interest groups is important. And then I think it is more effective to solve the immediate problem.
Okay, so in the conversations that you have with your trade members, I'm just wondering, I mean, if this new prime minister, in fact, does not come up with new policies, but rather looks to continue the existing ones, would that be acceptable to your trade group and to the business community? Is the business community looking for continuity of policy, or are you looking for a more significant shift, a shake-up of things?
Of course, when the Prime Minister were to say about inclusivity, were to talk about Keluarga Malaysia, I hope that there is a genuine promise of trying to relook and revamp the existing system now. We all know that the people are not happy with some of the practices, the U-turn, and the way we handle our COVID, and even some of the earlier part of the vaccination process. So I think people feel strongly that the decision making and is all limited to only federal level, and I think there's not enough grassroots feedback. So we are expecting that to talk about the enlarged council is precisely thinking about we must look into even more efficient, more targeted, more focused policy to handle the COVID and also the economic recovery, because at the end of the day, if everything is the same, then there's nothing exciting about it. And in fact, personally, I would like to look at the announcement soon of the cabinet. If it's the same minister, everything is the same, the structure all the same, I think people will not be able to enhance their confidence into the so-called new government. And
okay, so very quickly, sorry, we just have 1 minute left. Very quickly, what would you like to see the new cabinet implement? Top three most important priorities for you.
Okay, first is I think they need to have a lean structure. The old structure is just too many ministries. And you know the crisis, wartime crisis, you need to have a lot of interdepartmental working together, the inter-ministry. So it is important that we have a lean structure, a very efficient, so the candidate of the minister, everything by the announcement, we will know how much our new prime minister is going to go forward towards a new policy and new changes. That is the first. Second, of course, as I say, the ministry at the moment, people are focusing into health ministry and also ministry relating with economics, but also education, because the other thing, education, not many people talk about it. The whole country and the school have been stopped for so long. Now, reopening of school, the plan is so important. In many countries, people are talking about the different structure, procedure, how to open the school. But somehow we are seems to be quite silent. Supposed to be September, now we talk to October. But what is the actual procedure to go through? We really don't know. And finally, I think the cabinet, we have to really look into appointing those with strong executive power and able to implement things. And I think the candidate itself, it is important. But finally, I would like to see that all the decision-making, we have to enlarge the political base. If the opposition is able to accept some of these posts in the council, in the recovery council or the anti-COVID scheme and the committee, then I think government will be better prepared to implement things, policy that is necessary, but may not be popular, but for the short-term suffering, we may have to bite the bullet and let the economic situation return, let the COVID curve be flattened.
Right.
And I think we need that without consideration of political party interest, but it's the interest of the whole nation.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. That was Dato' Tan Yew Singh of the Malaysia China Chamber of Commerce. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back with more. So don't you go anywhere. Stay tuned. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Chirag Tatun. In his inaugural address yesterday, newly minted Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob said that he will, quote, ensure the voice of youth is heard and considered in this government, end quote. Now, was that purely lip service, or will we see genuine inclusion by this administration? Kira, co-founder of Undi 18, joins us on the show tonight. Kira, welcome. Thank you for being on the show. Now, I'm just wondering, for you, what do you think would be the barometer to show you, to prove to you that the Prime Minister is serious in his claim that youth will be given more say in helping shape policies in this new administration?
I think, first of all, thanks for having me back. And I think, the primary everything to look at is that, for me at least, action speaks louder than words, right? So I think one of the easiest way for the Prime Minister to indicate that he's true to his words, actually just implement Undi 18. Just today, we were in court for our hearing for judicial review, and I think the implication of Undi 18 means that, you know, if implemented, 1.2 million young people are able to vote in the next election. And we know that in politics, especially when it comes to unstable politics like this, is that you'll have the power of the vote is so much stronger now because it gives you a real voice in the electoral system that the politicians will listen to, right? So I think that's one of the easiest way for him to, just to show good faith to young people. But besides that, I think I hope that he doesn't scrap away or try to revamp some of the programs that the government has been doing so far. But I think another area that the Prime Minister should look into is that recently young people have been speaking up about political instability, about COVID, myself included, and we've been reprimanded for it. So I think one area that, I think that would show good faith and how he's taking young people's voices seriously is to perhaps not clamp down so hard when young people are expressing themselves in a democracy.
Kira, are you personally hopeful, considering that Ismail Sabri was actually deputy Prime Minister in the previous administration? Of course, we don't know who's going to make up his cabinet. We might know by the end of the week. But are you personally hopeful, or is that irrelevant to the equation?
I'm generally an optimistic person. So I think I always like to give people the best chance that they have first. But with today's announcement of saying that he is not involving opposition members in the cabinet, and I think that's a wasted opportunity to show that, you know, that you can, that battling COVID is a bipartisan approach and a bipartisan effort. And I think I'm quite wary a little bit as well, because, you know, the fact that the way he got into prime ministership is also not entirely in a way transparent for the people to see, because again, it was through signed declarations. And I think young people who have been going on the streets, the regular people have been asking that, you know, if you want to prove a vote of confidence, if you want to really prove that he's a prime minister, he should also go to parliament, because transparency is key here. You know, I think ever since COVID, ever since Sheraton moved, the public distrust in institutions are at an all-time high. And if we don't do something to curb that, I think that's just a really bad indicator. Yeah.
Kira, can I ask you, Muhyiddin Yassin, when he offered the, you know, olive branch of bipartisan support, used Undi 18 as one of the what some pundits have called a bargaining chip. And I'm just wondering, Kira, what would reassure you that this will not happen again, that that Undi 18 will not be used for another attempt to use youth for political maneuvering?
Sorry. I think Undi 18 will always be seen as a political tool, right? Because it's an immense power to allow millions of people to vote automatically as well. And I think, however, the intention and the ideas behind implementing certain reforms is what's important here. And that's what Undi 18, the organization, we had a problem with when it was offered as an olive branch. You know, it was like, you know, you've been saying all this while that it's not possible, but yet when your position is threatened, suddenly it's doable to implement Undi 18. And I think if we were to allow that to happen, it sets a dangerous precedent for future reforms. Could, for example, a future politician hoard things like water supply or like food security over us? You know, if you don't have a majority, then, you know, we will ensure that the people will not receive these benefits or these rights that they are rightfully owed. So I think for me, Undi 18, while it's a political reform in itself, it shouldn't be dangled or even traded as so. I think this goes for all institutional reforms, right? Because when it comes to a democracy, you know, looking at things like party hopping, Undi 18, access to elections, these are all fundamental rights, and it shouldn't be used as a trading card. But although I think it is very interesting that it was something used as an olive branch, because it means that politicians, while, you know, as civil society, like, we talk about this, we do research, we discuss this, but oftentimes we don't feel like it's being heard. So it's quite interesting for me to know, to hear that, okay, suddenly now when the time matters for them, institutional reforms are something they realize that they need to get support. Yeah.
Kira, I know that there are a whole range of youth groups and organizations. We've heard some say or define inclusion in terms of, say, a seat in Dewan Negara, you know. And I wonder where you see the bulk of young people in terms of what they think would be an adequate move on the part of the new government to include them.
I think, so personally for me, I think if we look at, so a lot of people have been discussing whether cabinet members would have youth politicians on it. And I think that's also still going to be a challenge, because Perikatan Nasional don't even have many youth MPs to begin with. And I think the question of Dewan Negara comes in. So for me personally, I don't think Dewan Negara should be used as a way to promote non-MPs to become ministers. I think that's not the right way to use to give someone a senatorship. I think it comes with responsibilities. I think it comes with, and we have to hold them accountable as well. So I think Undi 18 on its own, we also advocate for Senate 18, which is to lower the age to become a senator. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it should be a way to rubber stamp laws, or it's a way to fast track your way to the cabinet seat. I think at the moment, what's important also is that we shouldn't discount that ministers can have youth officers working for them. I think the previous youth minister, we worked with him to push for Undi 18 reform, Dr. Sri Reza Amerikan. He had young people working on his team, which is why the issue of Undi 18 was very important. And I think it's we for young people at this stage is that with so much with MPs, we don't see ourselves being represented by MPs. We have to take the next step, you know, in like politically participating and actively joining political parties that represent our values. And then we have to put ourselves forward so that we can see the representation that we want.
Kira, always a pleasure speaking with you. That
Thank
was Undi 18's Kira Yusri. We're going to take another quick break here on Consider This. Back in a few minutes. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. In a couple of minutes, we're going to be speaking to political scientist Dr. Wong Chin Huat to delve a little further into what some quarters are proposing, a Federal State Council on Economic Recovery and Health, or an FSC. So we have Chin Huat on the line now. Chin Huat, thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Now, I want to talk about this Federal State Council on Economic Recovery and Health. You argued that this proposal, this FSC, will actually, it's an option that will allow Ismail Sabri to have the best of all worlds, the best of a unity government, of a war cabinet, of a recovery council. Can you explain a little bit why you think this is the best solution?
Now, the government need to broaden its political base so that it can make correct decisions, even if it's unpopular, so that it
its decision would be much more comprehensive without policy blind spot and flip-flops. Now, for that to happen, you need to widen it to include the opposition, the state governments, and also getting support from the society. But to have a unity government, as what was mentioned by Dato' Tan just now, you first would trigger more power struggle over ministerial portfolios. If you go for, same with this wartime cabinet, now, if you go for a recovery council, mainly consisting of unelected technocrats, then they do not have the legitimacy and the political savvy to communicate their decisions to the public. Most of all, at a time of uncertainty like now, it would be very difficult for anyone to be able to say they know what the correct policies are. In other words, you can have your best attempt, but you will still make mistakes. To broaden the political base is to share out the political responsibility so that no one would be able to attack the government for taking the wrong move. A lot of policies that are going to be correct or necessary would be unpopular. For example, keeping factories open for essential services while keeping mosques closed would be condemned by some as disrespecting Islam or even tyranny. So we need the sharing of political base, political responsibility from all. So and our system...
Now, very quickly, are you suggesting that this federal state council runs in parallel with the cabinet? Is that the way this would work?
I would believe that the state federal state council should have its meeting before the cabinet to make fundamental decisions on matters of health and economic recovery, and then the respective ministry can implement it. And on other matters, then you leave it to the cabinet to function as usual. In other words, this is the highest decision-making body, a one-stop authority to bring in the federal government, federal opposition, state governments, as well as input from society and the business sector.
Right. Because Prime Minister Ismail Sabri has already ruled out, he said no possibility of opposition members in his cabinet. So this is a way to allow for opposition voices. You're arguing that this is one way to do this. I'm also wondering why it's important to make sure that state governments have a seat at the table. Why should we focus on having this as a federal state council?
We need to get the state governments in for two reasons. One, so that a lot of decisions would be connected to the ground. As we have seen, earlier decisions in pandemic policy have often been one-size-fits-all and inviting disobedience or defiance from the state government. Secondly, our system has been so centralized that state government has little incentive to go the extra mile. For example, in the states like Selangor, when you have patients sleeping on the floor in hospital, why can't the state government put in its own resources to set up modular hospital? The simple reason is because the state government has no control on public health care, and therefore it has no incentive or no imagination to want to do extra. However, with a federal state council, you bring the state government together, the richer state would be able to shoulder more responsibility and therefore allow more resources for the federal government to channel to poorer states. And if you look at the National Recovery Council, the former Prime Minister Muhyiddin has included the state governments of Sabah and Sarawak, but he left out the 11 state government in Semenanjung. We need to bring everyone in, and this would be a way to build a coalition of all from the opposition to the state government so that the political responsibility can be shared out.
Okay, so Chinwad, we're running out of time very quickly. Is the Federal State Council then powerless? Does it work essentially through the Prime Minister? Is it about investing the Prime Minister with more powers?
I would suggest that this council should be chaired by the Prime Minister with Parliamentary Opposition Leader as the Deputy Chair, with the Chief Minister of Sarawak and Sabah as Vice Chair, and it has the same number of key minister and senior opposition leader and all the CM and MB of all the states. So what it means is actually a platform where the power would be shared. You would not end up having opposition members as decoration as in the case of the Special Committee on Emergency. That would not work. And when opposition is not fully in, then you don't expect them to shoulder your political responsibility. We may come to a point that we might need to make it mandatory for vaccination, but that would not be popular.
Understood. Chinwad, thank you so much for sharing this very thoughtful proposal with us. That was political scientist Wong Chinwad wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.